What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Dr. Robert Brooks, PhD psychologist, author of 12 books, and expert speaker on resilience and mindset. We'll also have a visit from our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. I had a great experience with my congregation, Temple Emmanuel, here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, at the end of last year, way back December 27th, working with Catalina United Methodist Church, the Muslim Community Center, and a number of other community volunteers. We gathered on a Sunday afternoon to make up and package food supplies for the community food bank here. Ultimately, we were about 300 people, more than they actually needed, and in a little over 2 hours, we packed about 40,000 pounds of nourishing basic food supplies for the hungry in our own southern Arizona. I suspect there's nothing really remarkable about what we did. It happens all around the country, probably, particularly during the end-of-the-year holiday season. But in another sense, though, it was truly remarkable. Christians, Jews, and Muslims, a solid proportion of each, by the way, working hand in hand, combining beans, rice, flavoring, and vitamin packets, all measured out and weighed, sealed into plastic bags, labeled, and packed up in boxes. The goodwill and the cooperation were completely evident throughout. Men, women, children of all walks of life, standing shoulder to shoulder, cooperating fully and good-humoredly in this good enterprise. Really, we were from every part of society. A motorcycle group pulled into the church parking lot just before me in order to participate. I met doctors, lawyers, engineers, teenagers, business people, university employees, professors, really everyone. There were people wearing yarmulkes, like me, some wearing clerical collars, others in the hijab, the Islamic headscarf. People of every skin color, white, black, brown, you name it, and every hair color and age. Teens working next to retirees, next to middle-agers, next to younger children. It was hard work, fun, and a great way to connect across all boundary lines. Among the packers were some old friends, including Methodist ministers and an imam I'm friends with, as well as his family. Teen helpers hurried about resupplying the assembly lines with more of whatever we were short of. It was a terrific, elevating experience. It also felt to me profoundly American, exactly the sort of thing that highlights what is truly great about our society, our diversity, our ability to cooperate for good cause, our ability to organize something improbable at pretty short notice for all the right reasons. It was a reminder of what America is really all about, an affirmation of what our nation is for. No matter what certain politicians might be saying as they seek national office. To play us in this morning, in that spirit, here's a song, Oseh Shalom, a prayer for peace, from the Jewish a cappella group called Hushir.
Stuck in the whirl of a hopeless fight, living our lives filled with pride. We tell our children that this is what's right, and then we never sleep in at night. So let's go hating, if that solves anything. But underneath the glaring, our eyes that want the same thing. Hosei Shalom, Roma, oh, let us sing a song of peace. Salam Aleinu. Doesn't matter.
our will to fight. But is it strong enough to open up our eyes? It all starts with a change in our vocabulary, learning to say brother instead of enemy. Oh, say shalom, give my own drum. Oh, let us sing a song of peace. Salam aleinu, we all call out Allah, and let us sing it in harmony. Tikkun Olam, repair this world, teach our kids that there's something more than the color of your skin or the clothes you wear. You know there's love in your heart, and that was meant to share. Salam aleichem, shalom aleichem. Both mean peace, yet divided by mayhem. We're all the same in the eyes of God, so let's come together as Ephod. Micha mocha by Elim, we cross the Red Sea so that we could be free. They say be the change that you want to see, and that starts with you and me. H-O-O-S-H-I-R, who shares telling you peace isn't that far? Let's do what's right, stop doing what's wrong. There'll be peace for the world, for Kol Ha'olam.
Let's go on hating, if that solves anything. But underneath the glaring, our eyes that want the same thing. Oh, say shalom, b'mromav. Oh, let us sing the song of peace. Salam aleinu, ve'al kol ha'olam. And let us sing
That was Ose Shalom by the Jewish a cappella group Hushir. It's the Martin Luther King Jr. Weekend, a fairly recent innovation in Arizona, but one that became a national holiday way back in 1983. The King holiday is one of only 4 days on our national calendar that honor an individual, by the way. The others are Columbus Day and Washington's and Lincoln's birthdays. Reverend King represented a powerful vision of peaceful transformation of a corrupt system into a more ethical one, a vision that created a fundamental transformation in American life, helping move us, at least officially, from legalized racism towards justice. There were many Jewish supporters of King in his time, and there are many today who believe in his vision and seek to further that work. U.S. Representative John Lewis put it well. The Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. understood that a special relationship exists between African Americans and American Jews. Both peoples were involuntarily uprooted from their homelands. Both peoples were shaped by the tragic experience of slavery. Both peoples were forced to live in ghettos, victims of segregation. Both peoples have been subjected to oppression and genocide on a level unprecedented in history. King understood how important it is not to stand by in the face of injustice. He understood that cry, the cry of Moses, by the way, "Let my people go." You know, there's a famous photograph taken of Dr. King marching arm in arm with a figure who looks just the way we'd imagined a biblical prophet would look if that prophet was wearing an early 1960s business suit and tie. The man with Martin Luther King Jr. was Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, one of the great Jewish theologians of the 20th century, a beautiful and profound author, teacher, and inspiration. Heschel's marching with King was typical of his moral focus. It also symbolized a time when both peoples, Jews and blacks, could walk easily arm in arm, and did. This past year, the Black Lives Matter movement, more of a collection of efforts than a coordinated movement perhaps, but nonetheless an important one, it has highlighted the challenges we still face in creating a society in which race is not the dividing factor. Sadly, we still have a way to go. On this weekend, celebrating Dr. King's accomplishments, seeking to further his lofty and as yet unachieved goals of a truly colorblind American society, we offer a blessing for the work he did and the moral standard he called all of us to uphold. May we work to build a better, open, more inclusive culture here in this unique, magnificent country, America. When we return in a few moments on Too Jewish, one of the most interesting and engaging speakers I've heard in a very long time, Dr. Robert Brooks, a PhD psychologist, author of 12 books, will be here. He's an expert on resilience and mindset, and he'll explain why some of us bounce back from defeats much better than others. Find out why when we come back shortly here on Too Jewish.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
Hi, I'm Ben, a student at Tucson Hebrew Academy. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can provide Jewish education to families at no cost to you. Direct your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization, and help make great Jewish education affordable. Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. JETCO gives scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K-8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction. When you give to JETCO, you get a 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income tax is reduced by the exact amount you've given. You can give up to $1,067 for a single filer and $2,134 for a married couple. You get that whole amount back from your state income tax. Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442, or go to JETCO.org. You can even choose a future date to process your payment. How cool is that? Make a tax credit contribution to JETCO and build Jewish identity in Tucson for generations of students. And it won't cost you a dime.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish this morning Dr. Robert Brooks. He is an extraordinary psychologist who helps people understand concepts of resilience and how mindsets affect the way that we do what we do. He's also studied synagogue life. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Thanks for having me here.
So you're also like a Jewish guy from New York.
Yes. Well, I grew up in a place called Brooklyn, New York.
I never could have told your accent doesn't give you away at all.
I will never try to change it. I'm very proud of it. But then I went to graduate school in Massachusetts and then spent a little time in Denver for more training, but most of my adult life has been in the Boston area.
So you became interested in resilience. Tell us how that transpired, what led you to begin to explore that.
Well, I was trained at a time where psychologists mainly were, trained to look at what's wrong with people and what their deficits were, if you will, and how do you fix it. But I became very early on, Sam, very interested in people who overcame adversity. I remember working in the inner city of Boston and wondering how does someone overcome racism and poverty and as adults be really optimistic and hopeful. I worked at a psychiatric hospital for years and worked with kids who had been abused. And when we did follow-up studies, how many of them were doing very well in life. And so, I started becoming very intrigued by that. And one of my main areas of interest has also been children who struggle in school and following some of these kids and finding, as adults, some of them very good jobs, very good relationships, hopeful, and others not. And I started realizing at a certain point, maybe I'm spending too much time on what's wrong with people. And maybe what I should start asking is this: what are the most important things in a child or an adult's life that helps them to be resilient? And what I mean by resilient is the capacity to bounce back from adversity. Resilience doesn't mean you're not going to face problems. What it means is when problems arise, you have developed ways of solving the problems, of coping more effectively with them.
You know, it's fascinating. We know people in our own lives that are sort of like the comeback kid. You know, they bounce back, mm-hmm. tough stuff happens, and yet they manage to come back, and others who don't.
Mm-hmm.
What are the crucial factors?
Yeah, well, that is what my whole career.
That's your whole career.
Starting, yeah. Well, we know, and not to say this too quickly, we know from birth, actually, based on temperament, whatever, some people actually from birth almost have a greater predisposition to be resilient based on their temperament. But that doesn't mean that if someone does not, that they cannot, with certain help, be more resilient. I think the most basic factor is research that was done that actually asked people who are resilient, who had really had difficult childhoods, and they were asked, what do you think was the most important thing in your childhood to help you to be resilient today, to help you to be more hopeful and optimistic? In every study that was ever done, bar none, the first answer was always the same. It sounded simple, but in a very spiritual way, I think it's why we're all here. People would say there was at least one person along the way who truly believed in me and stood by me. The power of the relationship was incredible. And a psychologist who died a few years ago, one of my heroes in the field of psychologists, Julius Siegel from Washington, D.C., he called that person a charismatic adult. He was talking mainly about kids in a child's life. And while some people may not be thrilled by the word charismatic, his definition is poetic. He says, it's an adult from whom a child or adolescent gathers strength. And I love that image, a child or adolescent gathers strength. And then, of course, comes the question that, well, I've had people say, okay, I want to be a charismatic adult. What do I say or do? So the basic foundation is you need people who believe in you. And then there are certain things, certain skills they can develop in you, certain attitudes they can promote which help you to be resilient.
We will come back and hear more about these fascinating ideas and many more from Dr. Robert Brooks in just a few moments here on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We welcome Pam and David of Freedom Smoke. So your product, a smokeless way to get off of tobacco, people don't really understand exactly what's wrong with cigarettes, or they think it's the same thing that's wrong with your product. Can you explain the difference?
That's true, Rabbi Kohan. Part of it is the cigarettes themselves, the FDA made them release the ingredients. There's over 3,000 ingredients in cigarettes. There's four ingredients in electronic cigarettes. Propylene glycol, vegetable glycerin, flavorings from Flavor Art in Italy, who is who we use, and nicotine itself. Our nicotine is USP hospital grade. It's the finest that you can purchase. Nicotine in and of itself is not harmful to the human body. That's why we have so many doctors referring patients that they just cannot get to quit smoking cigarettes. They send them to us for a much healthier alternative.
And where do people go and how do they find your stuff?
They can go to one of our three stores here in Tucson. We've got one at Orange Grove and River, one at Broadway and Swan, and one at 12th and Valencia. Or they can go online to freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thanks very much, and we'll talk next week.
Always a pleasure.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You hear all past and present shows through our website or download us at the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. We have less than 10 months until we elect a new president of the United States. We continue our election year feature, the 2016 Too Jewish Presidential Report, as we choose the new leader for our nation. Al-Qaeda's East African affiliate has released a recruitment video that targets American blacks and Muslims and includes a clip of presidential candidate Donald Trump calling for Muslims to be banned from entering the United States. The 51-minute video by the Somalia-based Al-Shabaab terror group shows the U.S. is a country of institutionalized racism against blacks, that also persecutes Muslims. The video shows radical Islam as a solution. The clip of Trump on the campaign trail consists of his infamous proposal for the total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States to protect the country. Presidential candidate Hillary Clinton earlier claimed that the Islamic State group, another terrorist organization, was using such quotes to recruit followers. That prompted Trump to call her a liar. Maybe not. The quotes from Trump are bracketed in this video by a recorded speech from Yemeni American cleric Anwar al-Awlaki, one of the most prominent English language recruiters for al-Qaeda. He was killed by a U.S. drone strike in Yemen in 2011. In this video, he warns the U.S. will turn against its own Muslims. The video was released on Twitter. According to the site Intel Monitoring Group, it tells the story of several Americans from Minnesota who joined al-Shabaab and were killed in fighting in Somalia, holding them up as examples to be followed. Using footage from recent racial conflicts in the U.S., as well as historic quotes from Malcolm X, the video lays out the argument that blacks and Muslims will always face discrimination in the U.S. and should join jihadi movements to fight back. Al-Shabaab is fighting the internationally backed Somali government. It was pushed out of Mogadishu back in 2011 with the help of African Union troops. The terrorists have still managed to carry out many guerrilla attacks in Somalia and the country's contributing troops, including Kenya, Djibouti, and Uganda. Trump leads in the polls to be the Republican candidate in this year's presidential election. He has been rebuked by both Democratic and Republican candidates for his proposed ban on Muslims. The latest polls show that American Jews have a 75% unfavorable attitude towards Donald Trump. Those are the highest negatives recorded by any candidate in the race. That was our 2016 presidential election from a Jewish perspective update. We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John. Boker Tov.
Good morning.
We talked the last couple of weeks about Jewish values, and in particular, Tikkun Olam, the
right.
Repair of the world. We're coming up in a little more than a week and a half, or a little more than a week, I'd say, to the Jewish festival of Tu B'Shvat,
yeah.
The New Year for Trees.
Right.
How does Tikkun Olam reflect on this kind of naturalistic Jewish Arbor Day, Jewish Earth
sure,
Day?
Sure, sure. Well, long before Earth Day was invented, we've been celebrating the value of nature and, you know, the birth of the trees. And it's a beautiful time to really step back and appreciate being a human being on planet Earth. As cheesy as that might sound, we're all creatures of this planet, and we have a very important role to play here in taking care of the planet. So there are all kinds of things that can be done in the avenue of Tikkun Olam, and doing them around Tu B'Shvat is a great opportunity. I remember when I was a preschool student at the Anti-Israel preschool program, we planted a tree.
A couple of years ago.
A couple of yarns ago, yes. We planted a tree. It's still actually there.
Wow.
And the impact that activity had on me was huge. The earth in my hands getting a little bit muddy, and then seeing this tree grow for decades and decades, I think was a great effect, had a great effect on me. So making sure that kids have an opportunity to do something with nature, even just experiencing nature, going on a hike, planting some flowers that are already in bloom, little things like that can have a long impact in the way that we interact with the world.
Remember the old joke about the Jewish National Fund, in which, you know, constantly the little pushka, the blue
right,
and white
right.
one, you're raising money, you get a tree for your bar mitzvah.
I was just
going
to say, during my bar mitzvah era, that was the big gift.
That was a big gift. You know, your day to water it is Thursday, you know, those kinds of jokes. But it's not really a joke. It kind of gave that little small hands-on appreciation for the fact that we are kind of stewards as well as tenants on this earth.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're fragile, and so is the planet. So I think that those early childhood experiences of interacting with nature in some way are really critical, especially in an era where it seems that technology sort of drives a wedge between kids getting out there, being active under the sun, fresh air, interacting with nature, just going, you know, to Mount Lemmon.
But they have apps
out in the woods
that they can grow things.
There's no app that smells like a ponderosa pine.
Not yet. Thank God.
Right.
Thanks, John. We will talk next week and continue to talk about Tu B'Shvat.
You're welcome. Get out there, everybody.
Absolutely. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Jarrow Psychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Jarrow Psych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Jarrow Psychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through 8th grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
The Temple Emmanuel pilgrimage trip to Israel with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, is going May 29th to June 9th of 2016. If you want to go on this fabulous journey to Israel with me, seeing it all from Tel Aviv to Haifa to Tzfat to the Sea of Galilee to unbelievable Jerusalem, please email tojewishradio18@gmail.com, TOOJewishRadio18@gmail, or call 520-327-4501 for more information and an itinerary. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Young Dr. Levine comes into the room to see his elderly patient, Mrs. Goldberg. As he looks through her chart, he's startled to see that his predecessor prescribed birth control pills for her, and she's in the office specifically to get a renewal on her birth control pills. Mrs. Goldberg, he says, you realize these are birth control pills? You're in your 80s. Why do you have them? Well, doctor, they help me sleep better at night. Dr. Levine says, I can assure you there's nothing in these birth control pills that could possibly help you sleep better at night. When she hears this, Mrs. Goldberg reaches over gently, pats Dr. Levine on the knee and says, ah, yes, they do, doctor. I get up very early every morning, grind up the pills, mix it in the orange juice I give my 16-year-old granddaughter. Believe me, doctor, this helps me sleep much better at night. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. Journeys are centrally important in Judaism. The act of leaving and heading out into the great unknown is crucial for us. At some level, the right theme song for Jews should be On the Road Again. Repeatedly, in Jewish tradition, great leaders, even the whole of our people, heads out into the wilderness to seek God and make a new life somewhere else. It happened first with Abraham in the Torah portion of Lech Lecha. It happens two generations later with Jacob, whose name is changed to Israel when he becomes the founder of our people, and it happens again with Moses, who flees his country of birth in Egypt to find God in the Sinai wilderness. leaves there to go back to Egypt, and finally takes the whole people of Israel out of slavery in this week's portion of B'Shalach and puts them on the path to redemption and freedom. And it keeps happening throughout Jewish history. The idea of wandering Jew has ideological relevance as well as pathos. Wandering seems to be something we need to do. It's in our blood, not just something that's forced upon us. In particular, Jewish religious tradition has a peculiar perspective on the events of the Exodus, which climax in this week's Torah portion of B'Shalach. It's true that the drama of Jewish history begins with the story of the Exodus from Egypt and the escape from Pharaoh on the shores of the Sea of Reeds. It's logical we focus on that. But in our prayers, practices, and traditions, we raise up this escape from slavery and the heading out into the Sinai wilderness to the highest conceivable historical status, far beyond what seems appropriate. It's not just the way we make Passover such a central holiday. The preeminent festival of freedom should be focally important. But we remind ourselves of this Exodus far more often than that. Every Friday night when we say Kiddush, we declare that we observe the Sabbath, Zecher Letziat Mitzrayim, in remembrance of the Exodus from Egypt. Well, that's scarcely true. According to our own Torah, Shabbat goes back to God's creation of the world long before the Exodus. We focus on this great narrative and its denouement in nearly obsessive ways. Why? Perhaps because, in effect, our central Jewish story is about transition, travel, hitting the road. It's a core narrative for Jews. To paraphrase Descartes, we left, therefore we are. Our essential nature as a people was formed by this Exodus. When we find ourselves in slavery, either physical, psychological, or moral, we must, as Jews, choose to leave. Seeing how our ancestors did it against all odds in order to find a new life of ethical freedom and covenant with God can inspire us today. When we return on To Jewish, our very engaging guest, Dr. Robert Brooks, PhD psychologist, author of 12 books on resilience and mindset, will explain how we can make meaningful changes in our lives when we return in just a moment here on To Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
A 16th century Talmud printed by Daniel Bomberg, a Venice-based Christian publisher, sold for $9.3 million last month at Sotheby's in its auction of a dozen books from the legendary Val Madonna Trust Library collection. The auction of the Bomberg Talmud and 11 other books, which took place in New York, netted a total of almost $15 million overall for the Trust Library, almost half the pre-sale valuation for the entire Val Madonna collection, the most valuable collection of rare Jewish books and manuscripts in the whole world. The library, consisting of about 300 handwritten Hebrew manuscripts and 13,000 printed books from around the world, has been appraised at anywhere from $30 million to $40 million. Pre-auction, the Bomberg Talmud itself was expected to sell for between $5 and $7 million. It went for more than $9 million. The winning bid for the rare Talmud set came from a Stephen Lowenthal of the 19th century rare book and photograph shop that has outlets in Brooklyn and Maryland, but news reports claim that Lowenthal secured the Talmud for New York businessman Leon Black, a managing partner and the CEO of the private equity firm Apollo Global Management. He's worth $4.6 billion, according to Forbes. In an earlier interview, Lowenthal was quoted as saying, "Speculation is an inexpensive commodity. I'm a small link in the chain of custody." He was indeed. Whoever actually took possession of the rare book, its sale, along with 11 other volumes, represented the first breakup of this historic Judaica collection. Prior to the Sotheby's auction, the trust that controls the library required the books be sold only together as a whole collection. Moreover, the requirements originally stipulated that whoever purchased it had to keep it available to scholars and agree not to sell it off, except as a whole. The stipulations were set down originally by Jack Lunzer, the industrial diamond merchant from Britain who scoured the ends of the earth over decades to find and buy the books that came to make up this extraordinary library. But Lunzer, who established the trust that now controls the collection, is 91 years old these days and suffers from dementia. Over several years, the library's trustees were unable to obtain the minimum $25 million price they sought for it while managing Lunzer's stipulations. So they decided to set up what they termed a first sale of individual volumes from the collection via Sotheby's. They have not revealed their intentions for further sales of individual books, but their intention in auctioning off some of the collection's highest-priced individual books was to make the rest of the collection more affordable and thus facilitate the sale of the library. In other news, in Prague, two far-right Czech politicians have been charged with incitement to hatred and defamation over a note they wrote supporting a 19th-century blood libel. Oy. Adam Bartos, chairman of National Democracy, a far-right Czech political party, and Ladislav Zemanek, another official of that party, left the note signed back on Easter at a memorial to Aneska Hruzova, a 19-year-old woman murdered in 1899. A Jewish man, Leopold Hilsner, was sentenced to death for the crime, which attorneys suggested was part of a Jewish blood ritual. God. The case received a great deal of attention and became one of Europe's most notorious blood libel trials. Hilsner was pardoned after 18 years in prison, but never acquitted. The note, signed by Bartos and Zemanek on behalf of the National Democracy Party of the Czech Republic, said the murder united the Czech nation and showed the urgent need to solve the Jewish question. The Jewish question has not been satisfactorily dealt with to this day. Both men later posted a photograph of their note on social media. Bartos confirmed that he and his party colleague were charged with these crimes. "I think the accusations are unsubstantiated." Not quite sure why he says that. "And I stand by the remarks," Bartos said. The men, who repeated these Hitlerian Nazi-style comments, could be sentenced to up to 3 years in prison if convicted for committing hate crimes. Somehow, the evil lies of the distant past never seem to be completely eradicated, certainly in Europe. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world.
We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Dr. Robert Brooks is a very prominent PhD psychologist who has written extensively on questions like resilience, on mindsets, on the ways that we both individually and then collectively deal with adversity and shape and change the organizations and ourselves. We talked a little bit. I want to go back to that idea of a charismatic individual. Mm-hmm. who believes in a child and helps that child. The child draws strength from that individual. By the way, I like the idea of charismatic. I think it's he meant it in a way that some of us who've studied authority or philosophy understand it well.
Yes, by the way, I agree. Actually, I was surprised when some people said, why didn't he use a different term? Yeah. So I say, okay, but let's focus on his definition. But right. A lot of people do not have problems with it. I guess because some have, it seems like every time I introduce it, I say...
You have to apologize for it before you say it.
Let's look at the definition. And if anyone right. knew Julius Siegel, he was just a wonderful man.
Let's talk a little bit beyond the individual and the development of the child that gives them the strength to become resilient individuals. Organizations also have challenges with resilience. You know, we've seen lots of ups and downs. I speak from the synagogue world. Since 2007, all kinds of changes have taken place, lots of adversity. There's always adversity. What characterizes organizations that are resilient?
Well, one of the most important things in resilience, whether organizations or people, is this. As a psychologist, I've noticed with many individuals and organizations, they expend too much time and energy trying to change things that they're not going to be able to change. And so one of the main characteristics when we talk about resilience is resilient people, and I'll say resilient organizations, if difficult situations arise, they do not blame the situation, they don't blame other people, they don't blame themselves. But what they're always asking is, what is it that I could do differently to correct or deal with this situation? In one of my books, I talk about how we are the authors of our own lives. And what I mean by this is, there are things we may not have control over, but what we do have control over is our response and attitude to any set of circumstances. So there could be difficult financial circumstances, there could be a death in the family, it could be a whole host of things. In an organization, it could be that, again, the organization is not doing very well. What a resilient individual, and organizations are made up of the
collection of individuals.
Is there, what I always say is, they're very good problem solvers. They don't dwell on, all the things that have gone wrong. They don't dwell on what if. They don't ask why me, because then you start falling into victim mentality. Instead, they'll say, you know what? Let's take financially. The stock market has gone down. I tried to do the best. It's gone down. But what do I do from here? Or, our organization is changing. What do I do from this point? You try to understand what's happened, but when people too often say, why me, or why did this have to happen, whether they realize it or not, it keeps them from problem solving. And I always say, resilient organizations and resilient people really look at problems as things to be solved rather than overwhelmed by. The sad thing is as I look at a lot of the consultations I've done or the clinical work I've done, I've had people 15 years after a certain event saying, why me? Why did this have to happen? And just to give you one example, there was psychologists who studied adults with learning problems who were doing very well in life, good jobs, good relations, compared with a group of adults with learning problems who were not doing very well. He found the one key characteristic is the adults with the learning problems who are doing well, years before, stopped saying, why did I have to be born with a learning problem? Instead, they said, I had no control over being born with a learning problem.
What am I going to do with it?
Exactly. The ones who had most difficulty kept saying, why did I have to be born this way? Which, of course, it's a victim, and it keeps you from being able to solve problems. So, for me, that's a key dimension in terms of, and it touches on a lot, looking at what we can do, what we have, what I call in my writings personal control over, which then touches on things like self-discipline and problem solving. Another thing I really emphasize all the time is that in my research and in other people's research, one of the key dimensions of resilience is when you feel you're helping others or contributing to the well-being of others. I have lectured about, starting at an early age even, we should have children in helpful situations through charitable work or whatever, going with us for walks for hunger, whatever it may be, and the message should be, you know, you're being very helpful, you know, or I need your help. It's amazing to me how people, even if they're struggling with different things, when they are actively engaged in helping others, it lessens their level of stress. Mm. And it really helps them to be more hopeful and optimistic. We all want to feel we're making a difference in this world. I mean, it's really what gives purpose or a passion to our work. It's really tzedakah, you know, where we are making that difference. And I cannot state highly enough that in all of my work, I'm always looking at how can I engage people who are not feeling very good or organizations in helping others.
And once they're engaged in that, you begin to see a change in their mindset?
Yes. Well, that's a lovely point, because what happens is a lot of the people who I've worked with, they almost have this feeling what Martin Seligman called learned helplessness. Whatever I do, nothing good is going to come of it.
Learned helplessness,
yes. That was a term he coined. But then he moved more positively to learned optimism.
There we go.
Yeah. But what it is if you feel like you're a victim, nothing you know, nothing you do is very good or whatever, and then you start engaging in helping others, what it does is it starts creating a different mindset. It's a mindset that I can make a positive difference. It's a mindset that I have something to offer here. It may not change the overall situation. It starts changing the mindset. Also, in a lot of the ways you're helping, it may be through organizations where you start making contact with other people. And another critical part, you know, in resilience is the connections we have with others. We now know from childhood through the elderly years, connections with other people are basic, I'll say, you know, nourishment that we need there. So it has, you know, it has these quote side effects of helping others. You feel better about yourself. You're getting feedback. You're being much more active and proactive. And typically, in these different kinds of activities, you're meeting other people. So you're also developing some connections around helping activities.
So let's explore the devil's advocate part of that, or not so much a devil's advocate, but often in an organization and often individuals say, I can't do it. The first thing that comes out, let's change it, let's try it a different way. No, I can't do it, it won't work. Mm-hmm. We see that all the time. You must have seen it all the time in your clinical practice.
Well, I've had people come in and say, I don't even know why I'm coming in to see you.
Yeah, so
right away they're laying it right out.
Why do I have to be here?
Exactly. Well, what you're talking about is, I do see it a lot. And depending on the situation, certainly there are different responses. I've had people just say, you know, my wife told me to come in, or my husband told me to come in, or, you know, in any organization, this won't work. Some people, they're just natural naysayers, I call them. And, you know, one of the things that, again, you almost don't need research to show this is, first of all, I always try to validate that, and what I mean by validation doesn't mean you agree, but it means the person feels you're listening to them. So I love to say to people, you know, I'm really glad you could tell me you don't think it will work. So, and sometimes that stuns people. But then I'll say, but, you know, I really want to look at, and I try to do two things. Would you like it to work? You see, so you raise that. Would you like it to work? Do you think what you're doing, if it works, would be important? So what you're doing is you're shifting from getting into an argument with them to saying, would you like it to work? And what? How will it help the organization if it does work? Or if it's just an individual, would you like this to work and how will it help you? Interestingly enough, just by starting to frame questions in a more positive way, there's something called motivational interviewing and another thing, appreciative inquiry, focuses on the strengths and the possibilities. So I tell people, I'm glad you could tell me, but then I try to develop a more positive thing. The next thing I always do is, and I'm very open with people, I say, you know, sometimes we think so far ahead, long-term goals, that we forget that there are steps along the way. Now, this may seem very simple, but it is amazing to me how many people forget the little steps along the way that you could take. And I always say we've got a, quote, program for success. And so it could be the smallest step, you know, like with kids I work with who have school problems. Oh, I got a book report, I'll never be able to do it. take 2 days to find the book.
Yeah.
You know, and this. And so
then maybe read the book.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but as simple as it sounds, it is amazing because people's mindset sometimes gets so stuck. You know, Carol Dweck called it like a fixed mindset, that what happens is that they can't move out of it. They can't think, you know, in a broader term. So I try to then validate what they're saying. I try to get them to think in a positive way. Will this be helpful? You know, would they like to succeed or whatever? Because once they say, yes, I would like it to work or whatever, then at least you have their, you know, they're going to be more motivated.
Hi. I'll add one final question. I'm not even sure it's in your work, but somehow I suspect everything is. Leo DeRocher, the great old Dodgers and then Giants manager.
I know, yes.
He said, running a ball club is keeping the eight guys will love you, eight guys will hate you. It's keeping the eight guys who hate you away from the eight who haven't made up their mind yet. Because there's about 24, 25 guys on a baseball team.
Yeah.
Is that true, really?
Well, I'm not sure it's true. Leo DeRocher is quite a character.
I'm sure it was true for Leo DeRocher.
Yes,
that much,
sure. Yes, it really was. I mean, part of it, I take that, you know, when I've been in a leadership position, when I ran a psychology department, I knew that there were some people who were not going to be, who were not thrilled with me, some who were. You know, I remember one person when we were, who said, you know, you're not psychoanalytic enough or supportive. I mean, people may feel that way. What I try to always do is to be, I mean, again, I don't want it to sound simplistic. I would say to people, if there's anything that anything you want to say to me, if it's negative, positive, whatever, I want to hear, because I think it's very important for me to know this. I also openly told people that I want to hear their opinions, but I'm going to have to make as a department a final decision. But if they ever feel that my decision is very unfair or I have not listened to them, I want them to let me know. And I would openly state that. I didn't want any elephants in the room, or what I call raging elephants in the room. And so I would say to them at any point, if anything that you think, any decisions I make are not fair or you haven't been heard, please let me know. You know what I found? I found it helped to diffuse the situation. Even if they felt it was unfair, it was almost like, because I had already said that sometimes you may feel this way, it was not a self-fulfilling prophecy for failure, if anything. I think it allowed people to not have knee-jerk reactions that, you know, Bob Brooks just doesn't listen to me.
I want to thank Dr. Robert Brooks for a great visit here on Too Jewish. People can find out more about your books and your talks from your website?
Yes, and it's simply drrobertbrooks.com.
Dr. Period? Robert Brooks.
No, no period.
No period. drrobertbrooks.com.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that.
You've got to clarify these important things. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical playout.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be Alan Marinus, Dean of the Musar Institute, author of the book Everyday Holiness and the upcoming Bill Gray Lectureship Scholar on Musar, the great Jewish ethical practice that helps us change our lives for the better. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from a Hasidic setting of the Kaddish Shalem, sung by Chazan David Propus, an old friend of mine. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Bagala uvizman kariv Ve'yimeru
Amen Yishmeru Adon Ve'adon
say, Israel,